The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is April 13th, 2015, and we are sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats. That's our good friend, John Wood, www.grasslandbeef.com. Don't be shy. Go out to John's site. It's very easy to navigate through. And if you are lucky enough to talk to John, he is one of the nicest people I've ever met. True gentleman, and for all of you who are envious of age, his father's in his 90s, and he still works on the farm. So that tells you a little bit about these gentlemen. Secondly, we're going to talk about where I was today at my chiropractor, Saugerties Chiropractic Center. They're in Saugerties, New York. So this is only for people that are in the New York upstate area, but, you know, if you want to call, you can always call Mark. Right now, they're in the process of building a new website, so to get a hold of them, it's 845-246-5020. Drop table, he does everything with soft tissue, trigger points, deep tissue laser. I had some of that done today, pulse electromagnetic frequencies. You know, he specializes in sports injuries, and he's very good with any type of performance, man. This guy knows his stuff, and we are going to have him on a show, I hope, within the next 2 weeks. Real interesting guy. Thirdly, one of my sponsors to go to Iceland is Dr. Will Wong. He's a regular on Motivation and Muscle, too. He's got some great supplements, and he's a great guy, fantastic guy to talk to. You can either go out and Google Dr. Wong's Essentials or go out to www.docsprefers.com. If you should call this gentleman, he will return your calls, just like the two previous ones I just spoke with. And last but not least is another regular on the show. That's Roger LaPointe. He's on every Tuesday with me. Roger's been with me since the beginning of our podcast, and we're up to, I believe, over 90 now, which is amazing. Right now he's running a special on a super squat bar. The bar was $299. It is now $225. Plus shipping, and from what he told me, the way they break it up, the shipping is relatively cheap. So go out to www.atomicathletic.com, call Roger, tell him Motivation Muscle sent you. Well, today we have one of my favorites who's on the show. I went with this gentleman in 2008 to Iceland to lift the Húsafell stone. Unfortunately, I blew my bicep out, never got to that point where I could even get to it. And I've made one other trek, and that was some weather-related issue, but that doesn't matter, and we're going back this year again. I have Bill Crawford on with me. You know, Bill will tell you Steve Jack, and Steve Jack definitely started the fire, but Bill has been one of the guys that I think that really lit the stone world on fire, especially with Iceland, and I guess I'm partial to that because it's a beautiful place, and it's a great place to go no matter what. Bill is a strong man. He won't tell you that, but I believe he's a strong man. He's definitely a stone lifter, and he is a writer and contributor to Milo. Now, I don't remember how many years it's been, but that's a quarterly magazine, and Bill just wrote a great article called Deadlift 360. You know, you ought to really check it out. If you don't have it, it's in the March 2015 issue. I would highly tell you to go check this out. It's very unique. I like the way Bill writes, and I also like when he talks about having big stones sitting somewhere in your driveway or by your house, and it's like a rite of passage. You got to pick them up and lift them, and you know, I think that's how we ought to all be thinking. There's always something we can lift and have fun with. Today's show, we're going to talk about Bill Starr, who just passed away last week. Bill's had some contact with this gentleman. And this ought to be very interesting because Jack King was one of his trainers, and he learned quite a bit about training from Bill Starr when he was there. So, Bill, welcome to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Thank you, Eric. It's always a privilege.
I'm glad to have you on, and I should mention, too, Bill is an MD, so it's good to have him around in case something happens. So, Let's get right into Bill Starr, or however you want to start it out. Obviously, if you want to build the base with Jack King and bring him in that way, or however you want to go, Bill, we can start whenever you're ready.
Okay. Well, thanks, Eric. Well, basically, my uncle that got me started into weightlifting he had actually competed. I don't say against Paul Anderson because Paul Anderson was in his own league, but you know, in the same meets, and was actually at the first time anyone officially pressed 400 pounds in a competition. Paul Anderson did that at the High Point YMCA in High Point, North Carolina, and my uncle was there. That's the first place that I went to that was organized to lift weights, was at the High Point YMCA. It's now a business. It's not there anymore, but I used to train there with the old wide well plates that Paul pressed in that first 400 pound press. Mm-hmm. But my uncle knew Jack King through the lifting circles, and he turned me over to Jack to train me when I was 16. And immediately, the first time I walked into Jack's gym and smelt the bumper plates and felt the energy of the lifting, I was completely smitten. People asked, you know, who was your first girlfriend? My first girlfriend was Olympic weightlifting. And I was totally in love with it, and Jack was my coach and ended up becoming more than my coach. He was my mentor and my, I would say, a second father. Jack, unfortunately, now is in a nursing home, and a lot of people care a lot about him, but it's because of what he gave to us. But as far as Bill Starr, Bill and Jack were very good friends. I wrote an article about Jack and Milo about 7 or 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Jack said that that the thing that really got him going was that Bill really was imploring him to start squatting heavy, back squatting twice a week. One day do fives, and then the next time he squatted, do repetitions of 10. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from, but basically that was the formula they were using back in the 60s, and it worked. And he and his whole team really benefited from that. So he always impressed on us that we had to really squat and become strong squatters and to become good Olympic lifters. But I stayed with Jack one summer for a couple of months, and when I was I'd actually taken some time off from college to focus on my competitive lifting, and Bill Starr was a good friend of his and came down for a few weeks in the summer. Yep. So literally I was having Jack coach me, and then Bill would be in the gym, and then we'd sit around and, you know, eat or go places to eat and talk, and it would turn into, you know, I learned the no deadlift program from him. I didn't even know what to call it then, but he just told me about it and how he had deadlifted a world's record when he was an Olympic lifter. And he also passed along, the five sets of five. He gave me my first copy of The Strongest Shall Survive a few years before that, and I lost it, so he brought me another copy. Yeah. The first copy I had was actually a hardbound copy.
Oh, wow, okay.
So then he brought me a soft copy, and that's the one that I still have and treasure. And looking back, I should have gotten him to sign it, but I just didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
Bill was a very gentle guy, but he spoke about things very plainly. And every time he'd speak, you'd say, "Wow, I should think like that." But that was that was Bill's genius, is that he took a lot of people to a different place just with good methodical thought. Mm-hmm. And I know there's Mark Ripito is somebody who's considers Bill to be a mentor as well.
Yep.
But, you know, everywhere Bill went, he became people's mentor, and it was easy to be involved with Bill, because he didn't care if you're a world champion or a local schmokel. If you were doing your best and improving and really putting your heart into it and doing the right things, he was just as excited about it, you know, because he was around a lot of really, you know, world-class lifters and athletes. But he always seemed to have just as much gusto when someone would make a good lift or make some progress. I remember the first time he watched me in a snatch session. Yeah. And I was a 16, 17-year-old lifter, and I snatched 220 for the first time. And I just would not put that barbell down. I fought that thing and stood up with it finally. And I put the barbell down, and he said, "You're a fighter." He said, "That's something I can never teach anybody." And that stuck with me from then on. I thought, you know, you're a fighter. You're going to really just, you're just going to make this happen for yourself.
Yep.
But that was the kind of person that Bill was. But, you know, his work was seminal. And like Ken Leisner, I got a chance to communicate with him last week. Ken said, you know, he wrote the book that we all wish we would have written. And Ken's a writer and has a base of knowledge, which is, you know, he's like Bill. He's probably forgotten as much as I've ever known about lifting. So I would say that those are tall words, but it really sums up why Bill had our imagination, is that he wrote that book. And if anyone doesn't have that book, there are ways to get it. I would get a copy. The cool pictures of the guys with headbands and long hair will really get you. That's Bill Starr in the book. But but just the information is out of sight. I mean, it's just, you just cannot, you just keep going back to it. It's one of the books I read every year. I reread Strongest every year.
I've got it sitting right in front of me, Bill. I'm looking right at it.
So what's your favorite part of the book?
I haven't read that thing in so long. I don't know. I mean, let me look. I've got it right in front of me right here. I mean, if anybody wants to know that hasn't even looked at this book before, the illustrations in it are incredible. I mean, he's got everything from overhead pressing to incline pressing, advanced training programs, programming, the big three. I mean, he's even got, like, drawings of, you'd be looking, you know, like an aerial shot of, you know, the bar loaded on the floor. I mean, this guy, I mean, he went through it. There's nothing here. Power cleans, the bench press. Everything here is described in full. I'm going to have to read it. Obviously, he gets into supplements, vitamins. I like all that stuff. To be honest with you, I'm going to have to go through and reread this book again. But there, like you said, there's a wealth of knowledge. He's talking about wheat germ oil, yogurt, you know, sunflower seeds, all different types of protein here, on and on and on. What can you say? Oh, he's talking, like, here, chapter 17, rehabilitation exercises for football players.
It works for everybody, by the way.
When you're talking these old pictures, all right, this is on page 172. It looks like the guy was maybe doing a push down here. It says the key to safety in any strength program is proper supervision and not the type of apparatus used in that program. And he's showing a picture, and it looks like a piece of junk, man. he's got a great shot here, Bill, of Alexia, man. I'm sure that, yes. He's at the point where he's high pulling the bar right here. Hey, this is it. This is the shot right here. He uses free weights, not machines, to lift more weight overhead than anyone in history. This is the quintessential thing where, hey, like Bill was saying, if you want to go through something and really learn, this is it. I mean, and I'm looking at him here. I don't know. Let's see. Well, he's talking about weightlifters, the first group of athletes to use anabolic steroids on a large scale. Soon thereafter, other athletes took a page from the weightlifting manual, and steroid usage became widespread. So obviously he gets into that. All I can tell you is I'm going to have to go through this now and read it, because the illustrations and everything are worth the ride right there. I got this from Iron Mind. I believe I got that from Iron Mind years ago. Randall Strassen sells that book, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, it's you know something, Bill? The thing is with these guys, this is what I said to Bill Hinburn, and I think I even said this to you maybe in our first show. I'm trying to find everybody out there like that to get on this show, and I'll tell you why. We're losing them now, all right? You know, these guys are getting their 70s, 80s, 90s, and some even are getting up in their high 90s. Their information's out there, but once they're gone, I can't talk to them in the ground. It'd be an honor to get any of these guys. I don't care if there's even women out there that, you know, like, can you imagine getting like a Pudgy Stockton on here? I mean, that would be one hell of an interesting show. So I'm trying to establish this where we can get their voices on here too, because it's a nice correlation to read the stuff, but when you hear them, a lot of times you can get a better picture in your head.
Right. Well, the whole thing with Bill is that he was really about lifting weights. And I remember telling him about, I'd had a chance to see him again, and I told him I was doing Highland Games and doing a lot of stone lifting, and he said, "You're crazy," because you know he recognized that stone lifting, they were you know, like Steve Jack says, the you know, the barbell was made to be lifted.
Yep.
But the stone is defiant, and you know, Bill recognized that those odd objects were just a different place, and,
yep.
You know, and but I think that's why they're so effective.
I do too.
I think that's why they're so effective. You know, I think one of the great stories that, you know, Bill would tell me little things that I still remember. Hawaiian shrugs.
Okay.
So basically, he found a group of lifters in Hawaii, and there were, you know, there's some really strong guys. I mean, guys from the South Pacific. I don't know if you had a chance to see my Milo article about the stone lifters from a place called Ruatu, which
I probably did.
Tahiti, and some great pictures that they had sent to me. And just, I've got a picture of a woman with a 220-pound stone on her shoulder.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they're very strong people. And yep. So, you know, South Pacific people, very strong. But these guys would deadlift the bar with straps and then do sets of shrugs, basically yep. taking the bar halfway down their thigh and standing up and shrugging.
Oh.
And he found that and these guys were like doing this exercise with 500 and 600 pounds.
Yep.
And he said, you know, they just became super strong with this exercise because we, you know, typically you do a shrug and you put it back down and you relax and you've got a
right.
safety around it. You know, these guys, it would take them a while to work up with this exercise, but that was one of the things I always remembered. And I still kind of do that exercise. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I still do that exercise. I find myself kind of guilted into, you know, Bill always talked about the power rack and had a lot of great things to say about it, but you know, just envisioning some big Hawaiian guy, you know, reaching down and picking up a barbell and then standing up with it and doing shrugs that way always kind of stuck in my head.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
always little things that Bill talked about like that, when you get to the bottom of a squat, you just have to relax a little bit. You have to kind of give your hips up so you can get that extra depth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to make you really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I first started doing it, I thought it was crazy because we all want to kind of stop and slow down in the bottom and just let things kind of, you know, tighten up a little bit as
yep.
opposed to really stretching out some. And it took me a while to understand what he was saying. But I always, you know, I always thought about that too. When I coach lifters, I try to give them that advice to just, you know, relax. Yep. And I've heard other really experienced lifters say the exact same thing, and I'm sure they came to the same conclusions.
Yeah.
In a different way. Those are some of the more pointed things. And I just also remember Bill was a very gentle man.
Yeah.
As a role model. He was a different character, man. He, you know, he had long hair and kind of like you know, sometimes you let his fingernails grow a little bit long, and but I'll tell you what, he had like no body fat and looked fantastic when he was 55 years old.
Yeah.
And was still really strong. I remember seeing him walk over, you know, and grab a pair of 100-pound dumbbells and do dumbbell presses.
Yeah.
You know, back in the mid-80s and just had everybody just sort of like, you know, with their jaws gaping open because, you know, guys didn't do that kind of thing.
Not at all. I mean,
here comes like an old dude with long hair and he's showing people how to do it. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, that it's a beautiful thing. I just think that maybe there are some there's lifters out there like that, but obviously, you know, I think lifting like anything, you got to have personality to be able to look at. If this guy didn't have personality, all right, I mean, you probably wouldn't have gravitated to him. I mean, obviously, you had Jack who was there and he was mentoring you too, and obviously they were good friends. But you know, Bill, I do believe your personality has a lot to do with, you know, are you going to be like honey or are you going to be like vinegar with people?
Right.
And you know, it makes you appreciate somebody now that's passed away that much more because it's like, you know what? You're never going to his words will always be in print, but you're not going to have that ability like you did many years ago to have a guy of that caliber even take you know, you kind of hit it right on the head, you know? Most of the guys out there are really only interested in, you know, world champions. I got news for you, and you know this yourself. There's a lot of world champions sitting in cellars and out in garages and out in the woods. We just don't know who the hell they are, you know.
Totally.
And And I think it's great that he, you know, you'd be there and he'd see you training, and you know, basically you realize you won't give up. And I think that says a lot about somebody, because I'm not saying he's coming down to a lower level, but when he can relate to the top world-class athletes and then walk into a gym and there's a kid, you know, nailing a snatch repeatedly because he just won't give up, that says something very big about his humanity, in my opinion. Those are the kind of people we sure as hell need more of right now.
I would agree. I think that's the biggest piece of it. You can read Bill Starr, but to, you know, to actually know him is one thing. That's just like my good friend David Webster, and I've had a chance to travel with David
yep.
a number of times and see him at Highland Games, and then, you know, and strongman competitions and a lot of different things, you know, or travel Scotland to different stones with him. That's when he's at his best, when he's home in Scotland, because
yep.
he knows every little detail. For every word he's written, he knows 10,000 more. It's mind boggling. And you know, I sit between him and Terry Todd a few weeks ago at the Arnold Sports Festival.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, just helping out with the strongman and the weight over bar competition to try to get half Thor Bjornsson to set the world record. And
yeah.
I mean, you listen to those two guys talk, and I mean, if they're not talking about it or haven't seen it or don't know about it, it probably doesn't exist. You know, as far as weightlifting and strongman and physical culture and strength history, you know, David was also a great hand balancer and a world champion strand puller.
Okay.
You know, and to hear him talk about those things, he wrote the first books that scientifically talked about the snatch and the clean and jerk. He was a national coach, an Olympic referee. Helped form strongman in the form that we see it today. Started the world championships in Highland Games. All those things speak for themselves. But to actually know him, to know what a great person he is, and to also know what he's done for us, his legacy, he saved stone lifting in Scotland, basically, I think.
Okay.
You know, finding the Denny Stones and you know, and then just through word of mouth and being curious and going down to the river and dragging those stones out of the river.
Unreal.
And then, you know, hearing about the Inver stone and recognizing what it was and going to help preserve it. That was also been rolled into a river.
Yeah. Oh, the Inver was too?
Yes, it was.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, see, there was a cyclist. I've written this down because David told me the story standing on the banks of the Dee behind Mrs. Richards' house in Scotland where the stone lives. I did say lives. I believe it's a living being in my book.
I do too. I agree.
It's got its own life. But so he looked down in the water and he came back and he told David there was a stone that said 265 on the side and had a small hole drilled in the bottom. And David immediately recognized it as being the Inver stone.
Okay.
So he borrows a car because back in the early 1950s, living in Aberdeen, people were not that wealthy.
Yep.
Goes there and gets the, you know, and helps roll the stone out of the river. And then takes it to the Aberdeen Music Hall where they had a strength exhibition. They would have sort of like vaudeville shows where they would have some singing, some dancing, and then also have some strength demonstrations and competitions.
Yep.
The year before, he'd had a gentleman by the name of Henry Gray, who was a Highland Games athlete, carried the small of the two Denny Stones. I believe with one hand kind of straddling it and for 20 feet or something and won a 20 pound prize. And that was a big deal back then because people didn't think that anyone had ever lifted the Denny Stones. It was very suspect, or at least no one outside of Donald Denny.
Yep.
But anyway, so he took the Inver Stone to the Aberdeen Music Hall and Mr. Britton actually lifted it up on a platform. There are actually pictures in some of David's books about this, but
okay.
Without those efforts and that understanding and actually hearing the story from him and standing on the banks of the Dee and seeing where he'd retrieved the Denny Stones out of the river as well,
mm-hmm.
those things would be lost.
Yeah. Oh,
Is that unthinkable right now?
Absolutely. For anybody that's into this stuff, there's no – see, this is a good thing. I mean, you've got such history and you know this. I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff that it was buried in the water, and I've read a lot of things. You know, I don't want to ask you too, Bill. I mean, we can keep going with this. When did it get to the point where they drilled them and they ended up putting the chains through the stone, you know, with the round, whatever you want to call it, handle that you have to lift the dinnies with? When did that all occur?
Well, they used those to point masonry. So pointing is when you repair the stone and the mortar or plaster.
Okay.
So what they would do is they would hang these stones on over the sides of the wall. They would take these stones and then tie them off on the rope so they could put a plank and then drop themselves over the side.
Okay.
So this 800 pounds of stone, or 700 plus pounds of stone, would support the body weight of a 200 pound man to, you know, throw a board over the side and be able to stand on a small platform and, you know, do the pointing work. And then they'd have to take the stones, just keep sliding them down the wall, and then get them to the other side. Well, Donald actually supposedly, you know, lifted the stones and carried them to the other side. The bridge, the Brigadier in Petarque is about 17 feet wide, so the official feet would be 17 feet. And he probably did it the way that Jack Shanks had done it in 1973. I'd written an article about Jack. I know Jack, he was, before Jack Shanks, a 180-pound policeman from Northern Ireland, from Belfast, went in 1973 and barehand lifted them. By the way, he did it in a tie and slack.
Wow.
Okay.
He
straddled them and lifted them. Before that, people didn't think anyone could lift them barehanded because they've been lifted. David Prowse lifted them in the 1960s. And David Prowse is also known as Darth Vader in the movie Star Wars.
Exactly. Yep.
So
there were
some guys who lifted them with straps, so they had the back power. They just didn't have the hand strength. But Jack had trained his hands to lift those things and barehanded, and then the next year he came back and across the back of a bed of a truck or a lorry, as they call them, he was able to straddle lift them and kind of swing them forward about 6 inches or a foot at a time, and did move them across the bed of this long flatbed. So that's probably how Donald did it. He straddled the stones and sort of stepped forward a little bit and swung them forward and then stepped forward a little bit. Now, here's the thing. To restart every lift and have the hand strength to do that, Donald Denley was a phenomenally strong person.
Yeah.
And he probably weighed all of 200 pounds, and he was probably about 20 years old when he did it.
Yep.
So that just shows you this really heavy work. So that's why they did those stones. Stones actually existed on farms to tie off cattle. Those kind of stones are all over Scotland.
Yeah. Okay.
The stones would, you know, drill in. They're in America too. I found some here as well, where basically drill a hole through a stone and place a chain or a coupling or a ring to tie off animals. So.
Yeah. You know who I always, you know, Roger obviously is at Iceland with us, but. I remember, I don't know how many years ago, because it was a pic when he wrote for Milo all the time. You know, that guy, pound for pound, he is something else. I mean, you see him, he said, I think he failed the first time and went back lifting the Denny's. And I'm like, that guy was always a bulldog. And you know who else has reappeared on the scene? Because he's on Facebook and, you know, I get his stuff through his feeder. Tony Atchison came back from, I guess, a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
He's back, man. He's, showed him lifting a pretty good-sized stone. I don't know where it was because that was a few weeks ago. And I think he just entered a powerlifting meet too. So he said the last few years, he said it's, you know, I had sent him a message because I want to get him on the show. And he said, we'll, you know, he'll get set up with Skype. But he was saying that he's finally got over his injuries. But it's been a few, you know, it's been a few long years for him, last couple of years. So I thought it was great to see those guys. You know, they're both great people. And I'm glad to see Tony's back, you know, able to do some stuff again.
Yeah, Tony was, if you remember when we were in Iceland, the Brynjolfsstokk, that 620-pound stone.
Yeah, he picked that up.
Yeah, I was a little shocked because Stefan lifted it and – you know, put it down. I said, how did it feel? And he said, heavy. And I'm like, great. So I was able to stand this column of stone up and I got it off the ground. I'm thinking, okay, well, I think we're done now. And cause you know, Tony struggled with some of the stones.
Sure.
Tony reaches down and picked that thing a foot up off the ground.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I was shocked.
You know, Bill, I want to ask you, because I've read it's there, but I don't remember when we were there anybody ever saying anything, but at the time, that's when I tore my bicep and I had to leave. Was there a Judas stone there or not?
Yes, there is.
There is. Okay. Did you guys lift that day?
Yeah, it weighs about 130 kilos. I've been back to that site in 2011. I went back. Peter had a Highland Games. Peter Goodmanson had a Highland Games in Patricksfield there.
Yeah.
So we went back to Patro, and then we went down for a day trip.
Okay.
And went to Lautra. You know, went and stood, you know, lifted the stones of Lautravik. This was after competing in the Highland Games all day, and it was like 9 o'clock at night because the sun was still out, but
yeah,
it took
yeah.
a busload of people, including me and Benedict, and,
oh, cool.
Yeah. And, we went down to the Brynjolfsstokk. I lifted it again, and we went to the Judas Stein.
Okay.
And lifted that. But it, yes, it was called the Judas Stein because, a farmer kept putting it in a wall.
Yeah.
I remember the story, and it would betray him. Because it would always slip out of the wall. It's kind of an elongated teardrop shape.
Yeah.
Very smooth. So, but it only weighs about 130 kilos.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a nice stone to lift, but it's, I think for a lot of modern stone lifters, it's not a particular challenge. The Brynjolfsstokk, on the other hand, is darn dangerous and is a very, very heavy stone. You know, 620 pound column to, you have to stand it up yourself and wrap your hands around it, wrap your arms around it and get it off the ground. So,
yeah.
If you fell back with that thing, that'd be a
it'd kill you.
That'd be a problem. Yeah, I think it'd be a problem. Yeah,
they couldn't get if you're alive. They couldn't get you to the hospital quick enough. You remember those roads there? Holy God, man!
Yeah,
I remember when I was going to the hospital, it's like it looked like if you steered your car a foot, you're going over a cliff. You know, and I was like, and they were pretty bumpy even when we had those good Toyotas there. You know what else too is. Now, Legenstein is where we went the farmer was buried.
Yes.
He made the deal with the devil, and you had to walk. I think Peter said you had to walk around 100 times to free his soul. Have you been back there at all since 08?
No, I'm not. I was happy to be to be able to. He kind of saved that site and gave me the first crack to take it a trip around, and I was happy to lift it and take it a trip around.
That thing was insane.
Yeah, 485 pounds too. It's also a elongated sort of teardrop sort of stone.
Right.
But it is almost it does weigh almost 500 pounds, and you reach down and lock your stand it up, reach down, lock your hands around it, and lift it, and then have to walk with it.
Yep. Around that big.
It was probably about 70 feet around that big plinth, that big
stone. Yeah.
That you go around.
Yep.
And that was pretty painful. That's a beautiful stone. The Legstein, that basically means tombstone.
Tombstone, yeah. Mm-hmm. That always reminded me, like you're talking the way it was pointed out, it always kind of reminded me of a dagger a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
I don't remember. Was it just you and Steffi that got that around?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay. I thought that was it. You know, that was, like you said a long time ago, that was definitely the trip of a lifetime. It really was. That was a very interesting voyage. You think about the ground that was covered in, 4 days, was it?
Yes.
I think we drove over 1,000 miles, didn't we?
Yes, up and down the coast and west in the western fjords.
Unbelievable.
Not to
man.
Mention the Peterstein up on that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yep.
We went back to that site someone had probably dropped it too heavily on the large plinth. And broke a big chunk off of it.
Ah, jeez.
So it used to weigh over 400 pounds, and I think it might weigh. It's definitely weighs less than 350 now, which is a real shame. Because as soon as Peter and I saw it, we shrieked. We went, "Oh no!"
Someone had
broken a piece off, and I think probably just treating it too roughly.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know
that was beautiful. That was the part where it was like the waterfalls were all. That's where we were, right? For that, with the big waterfalls like coming down.
Yes, there was a large glacier that was dropped.
Yeah,
it's called Fjallfoss, which is which means mountain fall.
God, that was beautiful.
So this big this waterfall is 100 feet high, 200 feet wide, dropping down behind us, shaking the very ground.
Yeah,
and there's this 400 pound stone that you lift up onto a plinth, and when you turn around, the scenery that you're looking at when you lift the stone is actually down a cliff face.
Oh, yeah.
Out to a fjord. We had to climb this cliff face over an ice field to get to this stupid thing in May.
Yep.
Which
I remember
I took
that.
My family up there, and my wife was like, my God, I can't believe you guys even climbed up here. You know, what are you, you crazy?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, and that was without, that was even without the snow on it, that
yeah.
year. So, but, you know, to climb over the snow and to get up there and, but wow, how worth it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I can remember looking down from up there and I'm like, holy cow. You know what I mean? You could see the vehicles we were driving in that one little spot, but I was like, I don't believe how high up we are right now. It's like, man, if you ever went off that thing, good night. It's curtains for sure, you know?
Definitely so. We were back last summer and climbed the highest waterfall in Iceland, and obviously a lot of beautiful stones on the way there and back. So Peter accused me of actually lifting stones more than hiking.
That's all right. Yeah, you remember, too, I remember, I don't remember what they called it. He said that we didn't have time, though, I remember. There was supposed to have been a real nasty stone out in the woods. And I don't remember what he called it, though. I want to say a black stone.
It was the black stone. It was on an island that certain times of the year, the currents are so dangerous that it's almost impossible to get over. You have to take a boat.
Oh, okay.
And we couldn't get anybody to take us over that time of year because it was May. For some reason, when there's a lot of runoff from a lot of the waterfalls and the glaciers and the mountains, that, you know, it's just a little too turbulent in that area to get across to go over. So we couldn't arrange that. So I would like to make it there someday. He did say that stone has a good story, but it's actually not that big. There is a stone that I found out about that was used as an anvil.
Okay.
Years and years ago, and the story behind that was that this guy dragged it out of the water to be an anvil, and it's mostly made out of lodestone, which is iron.
Okay.
But the problem being that this stone probably weighs 800 pounds.
Whoa.
So maybe he rolled it out of the ocean, but I doubt if he lifted this thing.
Exactly.
So, but you never can tell, you know.
But yeah, anybody, you know, you don't know who can do what. Is there anything there? I mean, obviously you've passed by a ton of stones there. Is there anything that you've ever seen in research or just heard, you know, through the wind is there anything in Iceland you think that's famous sitting somewhere that you know of? Or have you guys pretty much exhausted what you know, what's there?
No, there's stones in the east of Iceland where Magnus is from, Magnus for Magnusson.
Yep.
I'm going to take him out there and have him show me a couple of stones that they used to lift that were named.
Oh, cool.
That have their own history. You know, there's stones all over the place. Peter Martin Jr., you know, Peter Martin had helped written the book with Steve Jack of Stones.
Yep.
Peter Martin Jr. has kept the work going since his father's died. And Peter Martin Jr.'s per se is not a stone lifter, but has traveled with his father extensively and knows the stones. And he's uncovered a lot of research about a lot of new stones in Iceland. And he's got a book that he's going to be publishing in Scotland. And he's publishing a book about this. So these strength cultures where they have these, you know, in Iceland and Scotland, and even I'm sure that there are stones in the Faroe Islands and Norway and Sweden. And I've heard of stones in Denmark that, you know, these places are even, you know, the Tahitian Islands and Hawaii and different places, there are still stones that have a great history that are not uncovered or have not
Made
public, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, that is so friggin' interesting because there's got to be more stones in Iceland for sure. There's got to be.
Well, they were a strength culture much like the, you know, and there was a whole ritual actually, the, you know, carrying a slab in Viking history basically was, particularly in Sweden, there are places in Sweden where you go and there's a stone.
Yeah.
And if you lift this particular stone and carry it a certain distance, a worker could go as a laborer and carry the stone. He would be paid by the distance he carried the stone.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you were strong enough to carry the stone, say 75 feet instead of 50 feet.
Yep.
Then you would be paid a wage because you were that strong. Obviously you could do more work and you'd be, your labor was valuable.
Yeah.
So that was one thing behind the carrying of a slab or a stone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the interesting thing was if you said Husafell stone, it didn't matter. It seemed like anybody I met, whatever age it was, they all knew what it was. I think that's very interesting in culture because, you know, as we find now, a lot of people aren't really interested in a lot of the older things, traditions, things of that nature. That I was very impressed with that, with the people there, that, you know, whether they knew anything, but they knew the name, you know, and that was very interesting to me to hear that.
Well, even more, they don't even call it the Hoosevelt Stone. People say it's Kaveah Helen, but it's actually Kriya Helen. That's the way you say it in Icelandic. There's a whole set of rules behind that, but the pin slab. But more accurately, they call it the stone.
The stone.
They don't even call it Hoosevelt or Kriya Helen. They just call it the stone.
Yep.
So I've talked to people, and they say, oh, you're here to lift the stone. I mean, just I went into a place to eat when I was there the first time with Eric. Eric Sauvé, and this woman said, "Oh, you're here for the stone," or she said, "You're here, you're strong man. What are you here for?" and we said, "We're going to Hoosevelt." She said, "Oh, the stone. You're going to lift the stone."
That's cool, man. That really is.
This was probably like a 65-year-old woman. I mean, it was kind of matter of fact too. There was no deal.
Yeah.
They rented the car, and I said, "We're going to Hoosevelt." And he says, "Oh, you're here for the stone." The stone.
I love that. I got, I don't know, you've probably heard of him. I got Raynor Wartell on Friday of this week, and he's been there. He was in Iceland, I don't know how long ago. They were, I believe he does a lot of, more of the Highland Games stuff, Caber and things of that nature. He said they all went there, you know, they're pretty shot. He lifted the thing, he didn't get around with it, and he is from... He's definitely from, I want to say, I don't know if it's Sweden or I think Denmark maybe. So he's going to be a very interesting guy to talk to about all this stuff. He said, just excuse me, because he goes, I'm not great with the English dialect. He says, I can speak, it's pretty broken. But, you know, these guys are real interesting people to have on because, you know, like yourself, they bring a very rich history of things. And you get it. And I like getting all the forms of people talking. Like I had Dimitar, Savatenov.
I met Dimitar last month at the Arnold.
Well, he was on. I'm going to put his show up tomorrow. He was awesome, dude. He was, he came in fourth. He said, I thought I could have done better. He said, but I've been nursing a bad groin pull for like a year now. So he said, I didn't want to push it, but he is in WSM. He was a super nice guy. And it was very interesting to talk to him. You know, his mother was Russian. His father was from Bulgaria. And he was telling me his uncle, his father's brother, used to wrestle bears. And, I mean, this guy was just so friggin' interesting. And, you know, he was a strong man in the circus.
Yes, a circus strong man. Juggling these 70-pound iron balls.
Yeah, yeah. And breaking glass on his chest and people walking on him and stuff. I was like, man, oh man. So, you know, I've been very blessed. I had a girl on, a strong girl from Australia on 2 weeks ago, Allison Dan. She was friggin' awesome, man. So, you know, it's nice. What I like here is we've got such a mixed array of people that have, you know, so many good stories. And I think this is what, you know, a podcast is all about. It's not only like teaching, you know, whether we give out 5x5 or we talk about doing singles or, you know, coming up to your house and that stone's there and you got to lift it every time you walk by. I love all that stuff. But when you get, like you're talking about, the stories we're getting into and like with Dimitar, and I'm sure, you know, when we talk to anybody else that's, you know, across the globe, say to speak, you know, And you know, we got a guy like Raynor on. I mean, that's what I love about this. It's the story, man. It's like, how did you get here? You know, what propelled you? You know, as a young man, you had Jack. You had your uncle. You know, you got a guy like Bill Starr on the scene that, you know, at the time, it's like, holy cow, I'm talking to Bill Starr. And it's like, I don't know. I think as a human being, as a man, you develop so much better with stuff like this.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I sort of stumbled into so many things.
Yeah.
And my article will be coming out in Milo in June. I got a phone call a couple of months ago. Ed Cohn was in the area. He was snowed in. Shocked that you get snowed in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So he came and spent the day with me. We sat around and ate. My wife cooked and we ate. pretty much all day. He left like eating cookies, but we just sat around and shot the breeze about stuff. And I, you know, my article starts off that I'm the Forrest Gump of strength. I've had a chance to kind of run into people and be around a lot of different people for a long time. When I was 20 years old, I went to handle a powerlifter, a guy named Steve Knight, also known as Steve Gilardi. He had been a Bill Starr protege.
Okay.
He was a 181 pound lifter, and he had some guy named Mike Bridges, I believe. anyway, that's a joke. He would play second and third two all the time at the Nationals. But I went to help Steve, and I'm just walking around, and all these guys like Doug Young and Fred Hatfield and all these fellas, and eating dinner with these folks. And I was 20 years old. I was an Olympic lifter. I wasn't even into powerlifting. And I helped expedite the platform,
yeah,
and do some things. And I just kind of stumbled into it. But I think the main thing is that people, if you're into it and you're interested in it and you live that life, we're all just one kind of, we're just one kind of people. That's what I tell people. They don't understand this. And not that I'm excluding myself from the human race because I'm a physician, so obviously I've been around a lot of different people all the time.
Absolutely.
But when I say my people, I mean lifters.
Yeah.
Strongmen, stone lifters, Highland Games athletes, powerlifters,
yep,
Olympic lifters, just people who like to lift, physical culture, wrestlers, rugby players, yep, those kinds. People that love strength and what it means, so...
Well, Bill, tell me this. What do you think, honestly? I don't know if we've ever talked about this, and I hope in upcoming shows we will. I mean, I've gone over this with a lot of lifters, man. I mean, all over. What is it that is – I'm going to use the word separates us. What separates us from, like, the common guy? I know all the things we like to lift, but there's – can you put a one word, a sentence? What would you put your thumb on that makes us – and I think we're very unique individuals. I really do. There's all different personalities, different shapes, sizes, lifting ability, et cetera. But is there one thing you could say about us that you could put your thumb on?
It's the love of strength.
Yeah.
It's the love of strength. I my wife surprised me with a new car yesterday.
Oh, nice, man.
Actually, it was a Jeep.
Oh, okay.
And so I went to the dealership today to sign off some of the papers, and the man who was there to sign off the papers with, we've gone to this dealership for years, and I can't believe I've never met this guy. He's a raw power lifter. And
okay.
He's benched 440 pounds as a 198 pound lifter. And this is, yeah, raw, drug tested. He totally is all over just, living that life. And he was geeked out on the whole thing. He knew about me and the stone lifting and the strongman, yep, and the Highland Games and all the people and everything. And so he just sat there for an hour just talking before we just jumped on the paperwork and got it finished. But I could tell this guy loved strength.
Yeah.
He trains in his basement.
Yep.
He's developed almost 450-pound bench press with no synthetic aids or gear.
Yep.
He's a 45-year-old guy with 8 kids.
Yeah.
This guy gets it. This,
yep,
is a strong man who gets it. But what, yep, he does, he loves strength. He kept asking me questions, and they were the types of questions that I only get from a few people.
Yep.
The people that get it.
Yep.
And that's what it is. It's just a love of strength. And it's not even like they don't even glorify themselves. I think another thing that the really strong people I've known, mm-hmm, there's a humility that goes with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they recognize that their strength is hard won, and it's also a gift.
Yes,
that you have the body and the mind to actually be able to train and lift. The idea that some guy rolls off a turnip truck and can lift a really heavy weight.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are more adept at some certain things than other people. Like Ed Cohn told me, he said, I'm just like every other lifter. I tried,
yep,
I tried a lot of stuff, and I stuck with what worked.
Yeah.
It's just that, when he finishes out, he's squatting over 1,000 pounds at a body weight of 240,
That's insane.
But he has that same basic love of lifting. And I get that same communal feeling when I talk to people that really get it. I've also talked to people who are who've achieved certain things in lifting who don't have it.
Yeah.
Like I've literally talked to World's Strongest Man competitors and world champion powerlifters and different people who don't get that. They're in it for themselves. They're in it for something that doesn't seem to connect, and I don't have that same connection.
Right.
But the people that, like you said, the people that, that get it, that maybe listen to that listen to your podcast or read Milo or have a worn out copy of The Strongest Shall Survive.
Yep.
And who are around people and hold dearest, you know, the people that I think are people say, who do you want to meet? You know, all these famous strength personalities are and athletes are walking around last month at the sports festival, at the Arnold Sports Festival. The person I continued to go back to and kind of fall around like a puppy dog and talk to was Greg Ernst.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, who's Greg Ernst?
Yeah, well, no, yeah. They
he's
don't
the
know
world record holder in the backlift, you know, authenticated world backlift record, and also carried the Husafell stone in the 1993 World Strongest Man in Iceland and, you know, set a world record with it. I mean, that's the guy who I want to meet. But he has the same conversations and that love of strength.
Yeah.
That is it. That's the it. That's a very good question. That's the it.
Yeah.
It's the love of strength.
And you know, it's that fire and it's like, I love talking like, you know, it's good when anybody that's on here, but there's certain people that you really like talking to about things like that. It'd be like, there's people I've talked to like you, I'm sure too. I mean, I sat there and talked for hours with them and, you know, like my girlfriend would be like, what the hell are you guys talking about, man? And I'm like, lifting. And it's like, they don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like, lifting? What's there to talk about that? I was like, if I sit down, I'll bend your ears off you the way we'll be talking. I don't mean in a nasty way either. It's just like, you start talking about something, and then it goes into something else. And then you start talking about somebody else and what they can do. It's just a very interesting prospect. And you know what I like about Bill? It's like when we talk or I talk with anyone, I'm always learning something from somebody that's on the show too. You know, or that, you know, well, you might, like tonight we talked with Bill Starr in the book. I'm hoping anybody that listens to this podcast and doesn't have the book goes out and buys the book because it's something that's worthy to look at. And I still say, I think lifters, I don't know, I still think it's a DNA thing. I've met enough like you where they might be impressive in some respects, but when it comes down to just being able to converse with them, I feel at times like I'm better off talking to a wall. They just don't have anything, and they can be out for themselves. They got to live with that. They can do whatever they want. But the thing is, like I said before in the beginning, with anything you do, you've got to have personality. You've got to be able – it's like anything. You know with your job, if you couldn't talk to the people you have to deal with any day, at some point they'd probably try to run you out because – that's what's lacking a lot in society today. It's like everyone's too involved with texting and emailing and this and that. And obviously when you're in this business or what you do or anything like that, you have to know how to at least email and be able to converse like that. But I still feel to this day, and I'll feel this to the day they put me in the ground, is you have to be able to look somebody in the eye and talk to them. I think that is very important, especially what we do, because I think lifting gets a bad rap by a lot of people. I think that with the knowledge that's out there now and the knowledge that's coming off this show, I don't see why we don't have more people out doing some type of physical strength. And you know, I don't want to hear from everybody, well, I had a bad situation in a gym. Okay, well, that's past. Now let's create a new situation. Take some action and get started. Don't wait for the best thing to come your way because it's not going to.
Well, a book that I refer people to all the time, Strongest Shall Survive, is a great one.
Yep.
You know, but that's deep water, actually. I mean, it starts talking about fulcrums and moment arms and that kind of thing right off the bat. But a book that I refer people to a lot is Power to the People.
Okay.
By Pavel Sedalin.
Yep.
That book is genius because basically he says you can go to Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a 300-pound barbell
yep.
for $150, which you still can, or close to $200, and get a rubber mat from the agricultural store and drop that bar on the floor and teach yourself how to deadlift.
Absolutely.
And the book teaches you how to deadlift, and
yep.
And some of its variations, and how to do an overhead press, one arm overhead press, what used to be called a bent press with a barbell, which will give you a lot of benefits. But he says you can go buy this cheap barbell and transform your body and become very strong.
Absolutely.
Now think about that. I mean, that's a great gift.
Yeah, but you know what it is, Bill? It's too basic for people, and that's what we're trying to bring back here to the show with everything is basics still work the best. If you have the foundation, you can build the house, and it's like, okay, you want to lift stones? Well, you ought to get some lifting under your belt for a while. No one says you can't start playing around some light sandbags maybe, but, you know, learn the barbell. Learn what a unique piece of equipment it is, because in my opinion, I still think it's genius. And you know, as far as like Bill's talking with the mats, you got a Tractor Supply Store. We got them right by me. That's where I get all my mats. And those things, you could drop a barbell on those for 100 years and it'll never go through it. Believe me.
Right.
So, you know, like you're talking here, it's just the basic things. Go out and buy a 300-pound set, you know, Olympic set. It doesn't have to be an Alico bar your first time out. See if you like it first. If you got the hunger for it, you know, maybe you graduate to a York bar. Just keep building. That's the idea of it. You know, buy a little more plates. Go out and get a power rack. You know, get a few stones if you're at that point, or just keep building bigger and bigger sandbags. You know, I just think that there's too much time lost on I need this, I need that to succeed. I mean, you and I both know you got a set of squat stands or a power rack, like you said in the beginning with Bill. You know, let's go out and do some real heavy back squats. What do you think Paul Anderson did in the very beginning of his career? I think he turned out pretty good, don't you?
Yes, yes. I mean, it's the basics. That's why I was talking to people about the basics of the basic lifts.
Yep.
That there's mysteries inside those lifts, and you have to practice them for a long time to really understand them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, how to set up a deadlift and to, you know, develop tension in different areas and be able to consistently lift a heavy barbell off the floor, or how to set up a heavy squat, or how to read a stone and get yourself in a position to have a shot at a stone that you might not physically that is at the edge of your physical ability.
Yep, absolutely. Go ahead.
That's the bottom line. You have to own it. Like I tell my son, when he's lifting, you got to spend time with it and own it yourself. That's the only way you're going to teach yourself these things. You can get coaching, which I had a lot of.
Yep.
But I think one of the main things you're going to get is just your desire to get better and own it.
Yeah, and you and I both know this. You can have all the coaches in the world, but when it comes time, you're the guy that's got to lift it.
Absolutely.
You know,
no question.
You know, the teaching, but like you said too, it's like, you know, anything you mess around with, you're going to have to find kind of its sweet spot and lift it. We're near the end of the show now, Bill, but I just want to ask you something quick, and you don't have to, if you're not sure or not. What are you looking at? I mean, do you got any desires? I'm sure you do, because of the love of stones. What's stuck in your head that you'd like to lift still? What would you, I mean, I know you love Iceland, but is there anything out there right now, you know, say in the next, if you got a 3-year plan here or a 2-year plan, What do you got in mind that you think you'd like to go attack and lift?
You know, that's a very good question, because I'm trying to reinvent myself a little bit. I'd like to lose a little bit of weight.
Yep.
And, you know, I went for a walk this morning with a weight vest on. I think that's a good way to get that started. But as far as kind of long-term goals, you know, I just have this desire when I'm 60 years old to be able to go back to Husafell and lift the Husafell stone.
That would be awesome.
And
dude.
and even carry it a few feet. I mean, and that's the honest truth. To keep myself in that kind of shape. I think you know, my goal at this point is to not hurt and be a little smarter about things, but to stay strong.
Yeah.
You know, and that sounds kind of not a very ambitious thing to want, but I want to be able to stay strong as long as I can.
Yeah.
Because I don't have anything to prove. I know that, you know, a lot of my bigger days, my biggest days are behind me, and I'm okay with that, because I've been blessed to have what I have.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing. And I feel like I'm blessed to have the family that I have, my wife, my children, and the life that I have. So I don't want to sound too discouraging to someone, because anytime I hear someone, you know, say they want a bigger deadlift or learn how to do a snatch or clean and jerk or improve their squat or go after lifting a stone or learn how to flip a caber or throw Highland Games, I'm your guy, man. Let me help you. I get fired up about it, and then I start thinking, man, I should really, you know, I really want to get back in there. You know, a few weeks ago I went to a friend's gym, and he had one of those flexible deadlift bars.
Yep.
You know, I went crazy and, you know, had this big set of deadlifts and things, and I still want to be strong but I'm just kind of recalibrating myself. You know, that's really where I am. My real goal right now is to stay in it long enough my son can see me as an example and to teach him. And he lifts. And when I go coach Olympic lifts places, I take my 12-year-old son with me, and he's the model. Yeah. He'll do a perfect snatch or a perfect clean and jerk or, you know, deadlift or a back squat. And I'll say low bar, high bar. He knows all these variations. Perfect form, great flexibility.
Yep.
You know, and so that's really my goal. I'd like for my son to be able to hand down this information.
Hell yeah, man.
Does he
seem, I mean, has he really put his teeth in it, as you feel now?
Absolutely. He really has. He owns it. Great. You know, I'll hear him in the weight room banging the bar, and he just doesn't feel good about, you know, how he snatched the last time, or he wants to deadlift, or I'll see him in the backyard, you know, pulling on that stone one more time. And he's met all these people, been around a lot of folks early on in his life. And he gets it, and he's really got that bug. And he really does, and he's got great leverages. He's a natural at it. I hope he understands that, because to him it's kind of like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
But he does have those leverages, and he is a natural at those things. And that's something that, there's, you know, he does have that. And he wants to know more about the history of some of these things, too, I'll be honest with you.
Well, so that's great, because, like you said, he's got the bug.
Yeah, well, he absorbs a lot of it. So. Yeah. You know, having learned from, you know, back to the original topic, having learned from Jack King, Bill Starr, and my uncle, and just, I can't even tell you how many people that have helped me in Highland Games, you know, Eric and Dana and, you know, so many different people, David Webster.
Yep.
Just all the great, great people I've known. But back to someone like Bill Starr. If I can just pass on some of the things that I've heard from him and learned from him, and that love of lifting and that humility and that desire to help others get stronger and have a life of strength.
Yep.
That's the best thing I'm going to do at this point in my life.
Yeah, without a doubt. And obviously, you know, your son's very fortunate. So is your daughter, to have, you know, a mother and father that really care about him. And, you know, example is everything, and no matter what it is, you know, good or bad, you know, you're looking at the two children you produce that are going to either make it or break it. And, you know, obviously with the influence they've had, you know, I would assume they're going to go big places. And, you know, that's very important, because you just see too many, you know, lost souls on the side of the road, and it's pretty sad, you know, the way people to me now, They just throw people away, and that's just not the way to be, and I don't care for any of that. But, you know, you have a chance here, like a lot of people, to really make a big mark, and obviously you're doing it. And when you and I both know, physical strength, you know, I can just tell you from the last few years, all I've had to deal with, lifting and being brought upright has saved my life more than once, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't trade it for anything, Bill. You could put a pot of gold in front of me right now, being flat broke, I'd take the lifting. I'd go sit in that cold garage with seeing my breath and the bar freezing in my throat and be happy as hell, man.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Well, that's what Jack told me one time. He said when he moved to North Carolina, back to North Carolina.
Yep.
He said he had a barbell, a dog, three sons and a wife. He said his dog died, his wife died, his boys grew up, and he still has his weights.
There you go, man. Yeah, you know,
that's kind of a simple way to put it, but Yep. And you know, the other thing too is they're not emotional. They always weigh the same.
Absolutely.
And there's, you know, you can't, you know, you're not going to get in the weight's head.
Nope.
It's just gravity.
It's just that. And you know, and the other thing too with it is, which is funny, it's like, we used to always say, you know, the weights will never let you down. Well, that's just a code if anybody doesn't understand too. You're never going to let yourself down. But they're there. To me, they are my training partner. I believe they have life like a stone too. And to me, it was the best thing I ever got into starting with just a set of sand weights and a wooden bench, man. And I've come pretty far, and I'm very proud of everything and everybody I've been associated with, because a lot of people don't have this luxury, and you know, I feel I'm a very lucky guy every day, believe me.
Absolutely.
You know, Bill, why don't you give out any information that, and then I'll give mine, and then we'll talk for a moment off air. But, you know, if you got any meets coming, you know, as far as with New Hampshire or anything that's going on, you know, obviously you talked a little about the new Milo article, but if you got anything to put out there, I know you talked about helping people train, whatever you want to say.
Well, the New Hampshire Highland Games are always something that I encourage people to come see. It's the third weekend of September. It's a few months away still.
Yep.
But we have a very unique setting, beautiful setting. It's one of the largest Highland Games in the world.
Yep.
World class field of throwers. We have multiple world champions on the field. Magnus Magnuson's one of my referees.
Mm-hmm.
One of my judges, Peter Goodmanson, legend in Highland Games, is one of my other judges. My friend David Webster is not going to be our announcer this year, but I'm working on someone that I think everybody would recognize as an announcer, if we can get them to come and be our announcer. But very unique thing, and really one of the greatest times you're ever going to have if you appreciate strength and also Highland Games and Scottish culture.
Yep.
And I've also got going to Nova Scotia in August to do a stone lifting demonstration and Gaelic culture, Gaelic strength history talk to games in Nova Scotia.
Yep.
And then going to the Celtic, going to Pleasanton for David Webster's World Championships on Labor Day weekend. So that's another little plug. It's all mostly Highland Games that I've got planned out with some, with some stone lifting. So
that's awesome. You know, I've never been able to find a lot about it, and I haven't probably looked deep enough, but I'd like to talk to you sometime about what's in Ireland? Are there many famous stones you know of, or what? Do you know much about the Irish culture with stones, is there nothing?
Well, I don't know of any named stones, but there was a famous mythic character named Ossian.
Okay.
Peter Martin had dug up some information about Ossian.
Yep.
And Ossian was found himself transported in time,
mm-hmm.
as a Celtic warrior,
yep.
And they said if he ever got off his horse, he would age the years that he had passed by being on his horse. So he was basically immortal as long as he stayed on his horse.
That's cool.
But he jumped off his horse, and he was immensely strong to remove a stone from the middle of a path.
Yep.
And removed this giant stone from the middle of the path, and by the time he jumped back on the horse, he was an ancient old man.
Yeah.
But he was still very strong, and he rode for many years through the hills in Ireland,
yep.
on this horse as a very old man who was also very strong. So that's the story of Ossian, this great Celtic warrior. But named stones, I don't know any, and I've talked to a lot of people that have tried to find them. There are a lot of Welsh stones that have been found.
Yep. Yep.
Like, you know, Roger Davis has written about those, like the Cricketh stone and those stones, and Peter Martin's been down, and there's a lot of, but I would encourage you to look at the Milo articles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Roger. All right, well, let me give my information. We'll talk in a second. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. You can get us at www.fiorellabarbellco.com. www.motivationandmuscle.com. Obviously, you know our sponsors say it was U.S. Wellness Meats. That's grasslandbeef.com. Saugerties Chiropractic Center. That is 845-246-5020. Hopefully, you'll get my friend Joan there, and she is a great lady. Tell her Motivation Muscle sent you. I talked to her today. Thirdly, we got our good friend Dr. Wong, who now is a regular on the podcast too. www.docsprefer.com, or give them a call. You will hear back from them if you don't get them on the phone. And last but not least, we got www.atomicathletic.com. Check out the big special on a super squat bar this month. Regularly $299. Now it is down to $225 plus shipping. So give Roger a call. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. We are on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell and Motivation and Muscle. If you have any questions or if there's something you like Bill and I to talk about, you can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.R.com. Bill, once again, great show. Lots of information. And as I told you offline, the word is inspiration. People listen to these shows and they are highly inspired. And like I said to you too, some of the ones they listen to get them depressed. So I'm glad that we kind of got them up on their toes and they're ready to roll. So thanks again for being on the show, Bill.
Thank you. My privilege.
I'm very happy to have you anytime. So for Bill Crawford, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. We're going to schedule some more shows with Bill and we'll have him on shortly. But we got a real busy week. Let's see. We've got Rob Regish on this week. We got loads of people on. I can't even go through the list. So we'll talk to you during the week and keep listening.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.